The following podcast is brought to you by The Village Zendo. For more information, visit villagezendo.org.
Good morning. We're having a party. Today, we are celebrating the anniversary of the Buddha's enlightenment. Don't know if you knew that, but you're here for a party. Some dedicated members of our Sangha and many Buddhists around the world sat through the night to honor this anniversary. I feel very fortunate to have received the Buddha's teachings of liberation from suffering, which have been handed down from generation to generation for some 2,500 years. So I'll start just by telling the story in brief, of the Buddha's life. Shakyamuni Buddha was born a prince in the Shakya tribe. His name was Gautama. And as a prince, his parents wanted great things for him. They tried to shield him from pain and discomfort. He was in a palace with very high walls, and all of the hubbub of the city life went on outside of those walls while he was raised with people taking care of him and really wanting for nothing. But he was an inquisitive child and young man, and one day he asked a servant to take him into the city streets to see what was outside the walls. And as the story goes, he was in a carriage or a palanquin, and he saw someone who was very sick. And he turned to the servant and said, "What's going on with that person over there? They don't look well." And the servant said, "That person is very ill." And they went on a little bit further, and Gautama Buddha saw someone who was very, very old, who was having difficulty moving. And he turned to the servant and said, "And what about that person?" And the servant said, "Oh, that person is very, very old. They are near death." And then a bit further along, he saw someone who had died, and their family was wailing and moaning in grief over the loss of this person. And he said, "And what about that person?" He said, "Prince, that person has died. All of us will one day die." So, speeding up a few years, he left his family's palace and abandoned the destiny that was planned for him to get to the root of the suffering that he saw in the city streets. Shakyamuni Buddha, before he was the Buddha, wandered the land, learning from spiritual teachers, trying to seek the answers to these questions that were in his heart. He practiced austerities, sitting for days without eating, and went from teacher to teacher because none of those teachers that he encountered could answer the deep longing that he was feeling. And then one day, he decided that he wasn't going to find the answers to his questions by starving himself. He wasn't going to find the answers to his questions by wandering from teacher to teacher looking for someone else to tell him what the answer was. He decided that he would sit under the Bodhi tree for as long as it took to get to the root of this great matter. And it's said that he sat for 6 years with reeds growing up between his legs. And at the age of 30, on the 8th day of the 12th month, as the morning star appeared, he was suddenly enlightened. And as the legend goes, his first words were, "How wondrous, how wondrous. I and the great earth and all beings simultaneously attain the way. I and the great earth and all beings simultaneously attain the way." These words were the very first lion's roar. And from this moment on, for the next 49 years, he taught what he had realized, adapting his message to the ability of his listeners to understand and to take in this unfathomable Dharma. What did he realize? What did the Buddha realize? Whatever it was, it allowed him to teach the causes of suffering and the way to end suffering. And of course, the words in this story, as it's told today, as it's handed down to us, about his experience, are very interesting. The Buddha doesn't say, "I have attained the way and you can too." He says, "I and the great earth and all beings simultaneously achieve the way." Now, the way that I just said it before, "I have attained the way and you can too," is perhaps our conventional interpretation. The words that he used defy our conventional way of thinking. It's actually a very Mahayana expression of the Buddha's enlightenment. It dissolves our habitual focus on our own individual experience and connects us with all beings. And it's an expression that really permeates our practice and our teachings here at the Village Zendo down to this day. Master Keizan says about this story, "The so-called I in this main case is not Shakyamuni Buddha." So-called I is not Shakyamuni Buddha. "And Shakyamuni Buddha comes from this I." Not only does Shakyamuni Buddha come from it, but the great earth and all beings also come from it. All of the Buddhas of the past, present, and future, all of the Buddhas of the past, present, and future are also enlightened. So how are we to interpret this? This Shakyamuni Buddha comes from this I. This all beings are enlightened simultaneously. At its most fundamental level, the Buddha is teaching no separation. He's not saying, "I am enlightened over here," in opposition to you who are unenlightened over there. It's not what he's saying, not at all. Perhaps he's saying that the Buddha mind, the awakened mind, is available everywhere, always, to each of us, in every moment, in this moment. In the moment of realization, there is no separation. The world as it is, with all of its beauty and all of its ugliness, the Buddha realized this and was one with this. Now, how did he get to this place of no separation? How did he get there? Well, the same way we all do. He started by searching. Started by searching for something that would ease his disquiet, his dis-ease, his unease. We all have our own stories, our own search. The Buddha wandered for 6 years, nearly starving himself to death. Those can't have been easy years. Seeking and not finding the answers to his questions. Abusing his body, thinking that somehow separating himself from the physical world was going to transform him in some way. That was an idea that he was working with that eventually failed him. Finding a teacher, teacher after teacher, and discovering that the teacher didn't have the answers that he was seeking. And then being disappointed and setting off to wander yet again. And then at some point, maybe just a glimmer of realization that the answer would not be found outside of himself. He had to turn within. And he sat under the Bodhi tree for 6 years with reeds growing up between his legs. Now, in our own search, we've probably tried lots of different things. Maybe we dulled our pain with drugs or sex. And after I wrote this, I actually realized I've been reading about Richard Alpert, who later became known as Ram Dass. And his search was actually facilitated initially through LSD back in the late 60s when psychologists were doing a lot of research about the spiritual experiences that could be brought about through drugs. So when I say maybe we dulled our pain with pain or drugs, this too can be a Dharma gate. And Ram Dass was eventually drummed out of Harvard, went to India, met his guru, and changed his life, and came back and spent the rest of his life teaching, which he does to this day, even though he has suffered a severely debilitating stroke and is unable to really move or speak much. His life is still a teaching. So maybe we dulled our pain with drugs or sex. Maybe we dulled our pain with work. At the age of 12, I was born again in an evangelical church, in an evangelical church service where we were being called to witness for Christ. And though it was a very powerful experience, I think it left me for many years of my life personally, with more confusion and guilt than relief. For a time in my life, the religion that worked for me, or that I practiced, was being a top student. And of course, even though it seems like organized religion in this country is struggling, this is only because people have other religions, other ways of trying to quiet their unease. There's the religion of I take care of myself and my family and no one else. There's the religion of make America great again. There's a religion of baseball. Surely you've met those people. Some of them are my friends. There's a religion of having the most toys. There's a religion of being a good person, of thinking of ourselves as good in opposition to all of those bad people. There's a religion of killing all infidels. There really is a religion that people in the Middle East deeply subscribed to. The problem with all of these religions is that they don't work. They don't free us from pain, and they don't teach us how to live an awakened life. And that's why the teachings that have been passed down to us for so many generations are so precious. We are not separate. We all possess Buddha nature, awakened nature. We all are called to the Bodhisattva path to serve all sentient beings in a way that's true to who we are, not to some way that we see other people following and that we try to emulate. We are called as bodhisattvas on the path to relieve the suffering of all sentient beings. Now, I know that in our modern society, suffering doesn't sell. We turn away from suffering. We institutionalize the elderly. We reify youth, happiness, wealth, and beauty. And I want to be clear, our practice is not to cling to suffering so much as to be present to it, because there is so much suffering in the world. And our practice is to be present to it because it's only by being present with our pain and our loneliness and the pain and discomfort in the world that we see that we can transform it into liberation. We can recognize that it's just brought about by causes and conditions. We can witness it, and we can live lives that do not add to the suffering in the world. The Bodhisattva path is one of wisdom and compassion. Of course, there are many Bodhisattvas in the world today. They didn't all come to this practice. I've been reading about the psychotherapy movement in Iraq. There are hundreds of children in Iraq who were captured by ISIS and held as prisoners for years. And many of these children now are 10, 11, or 12 years old and spent half of their lives living as prisoners under ISIS. A lot of the children were Yazidi Kurds, and they were given Arabic names by their captors and taught to speak Arabic and told that their parents were dead, whether they were or weren't. They were told that their parents were dead so that they had nothing to live for, to go back to. They were also taught violence. They were beaten by their captors, and they were taught to beat or stone each other. And the idea of this indoctrination was to turn these children into jihadis who could be reintroduced into Iraqi society and to poison it from within. Unfortunately, now as these children are being reunited with their families, there are people who are trying to help them deal with their trauma because they are traumatized. One young boy tried to slit his brother's throat. So this movement is a movement of European therapists who are coming from Germany and France and other countries in Europe and trying to work with the children and also train indigenous local Iraqis to be therapists, understanding how to bring the ideas of Western psychology to a culture that where mental illness is not mentioned and is a way of admitting to or acknowledging mental illness is a way of dishonoring your family. But slowly, patiently, and with enormous dedication, these teachers are helping these children move beyond the trauma of their past. They approach their task with wisdom and compassion. And whether they would say it or not, they are walking the Bodhisattva path. And so in our practice, we are called to be followers of the Buddha in our lives. In our tradition, this means we are called to realize our own lives, not to mindlessly play at practice, and not to blindly follow someone else's path. As Dr. Seuss said, there is no one youer than you. So I thought, as I was thinking about this story and about how we follow it today, these practices today. I was reminded of one of my favorite koans, and so I'll end with the story of the old woman of Taishan. On the road to Taishan, there lived a certain woman. Whenever a monk asked her, "Which way does the road to Taishan go?" the woman would say, "Right straight on." As soon as the monk would go, the woman would say, "A fine priest, he goes on that way too." A monk told Zhaozhu about this, and Zhaozhu said, "Wait till I check that woman out for you. I'm going to see what's going on with that old woman." Zhaozhu went and asked the woman the same question. The next day, he went up in the hall and said, "I've checked out the old woman for you." So, in my reading of this koan, the old woman is a nameless bodhisattva, perhaps selling tea and cakes along the road to a monastery, the monastery at Mount Taishan. And the young monks seeking enlightenment ask her for directions. But because they're seekers as we are, you could also interpret their question, "What is the way to Taishan?" as asking, "How do I realize myself? How do I do that in my life?" Perhaps they're asking, "What is this great matter of life and death?" And the old woman tells them, "Just go straight on." And when they follow her instructions, she says, "A fine priest, he goes on like that too." Now, one monk heard her say this and was bothered by it. Perhaps he was concerned that she was mocking him, having a little bit of fun at his expense. Like blind sheep, they go on without looking. They just do what I tell them. Don't ask deep questions. They just wander on. So this monk, who was a little disturbed by the encounter, asks Great Master Zhaozhu what he thinks. Mushe of Dagushan says about this koan, "All the monks in the world only know to ask the way from the woman. They don't know the depths of the mud under their own feet." If not for old Zhaozhu, how could the heights of attainment of the sweating horses be revealed? So these monks, and we perhaps don't know the depth of the mud right under our own feet. We ask Roshi, we ask our Hoshis, because we want someone to give us an answer. It's hard not having the answer. It's easier when Donald Trump tells you the Democrats are enemies of this country. That's so much easier than actually thinking for yourself. And so when Trump or Hoshi tells us what to think, we go straight on. Bad analogy, I realize, sorry. I'm talking about the mud under our feet, about blindly following teachers. This talk will never be posted. So when we sit, when we truly sit with a question in our hearts, we can see the mud under our feet and therefore find our own path. But that's hard work. So as the story goes, old Master Zhaozhu went to see the old woman and asked her the same question. "What's the way to Taishan?" Perhaps she gave him the same answer. "Just go straight on." Did she recognize that she was talking to a Zen master? Did he recognize that he was talking with someone quite witty and wise, who was living in her role as a tea and cake seller, which was the role that was offered to her in the time in which she lived? She couldn't be a Zen master. She was a tea seller. The story doesn't actually say. Zhao Shu, clever old priest, just comes back and tells them, "Yep, I checked out the old woman." In another translation, it says, "I saw through the old woman for you." Langya said, "Even the great Zhao Shu walked into the woman's hands and lost his life. Even so, many misunderstand." So old Zhao Shu just kept them guessing. He sent them back to the cushion. I think the old woman said something quite profound. Which way do I go? Go straight on. Live life in this moment. Live this life. Don't attach to ideas of right or wrong, good or bad. Be present to this moment and act accordingly to the best of your ability. As Zen Master Song San said, almost the same words, thousands of years later, "Only go straight, don't know." We've been handed a great teaching. It's a teaching that acknowledges the preciousness of this life, the mystery of this life. We start with questions, and we end up not with answers, but with a practice, an endless practice. We end up walking the pathless path. Only go straight, don't know.